Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler. We talk about money and investing around here, financial planning, helping you understand the world of investing, because I think if you can understand this a little bit better, become part of the process. Don't necessarily sit back and blindly trust anybody, because when you blindly trust people, you don't know necessarily what you may be getting into. And sometimes what happens is you blindly trust things and you don't even recognize that somebody has a dog in the fight. You know, there are a lot of things that you get information on investing from: people selling things, people marketing things, people that own things. You know, I think back to the days when you would get these little faxes. Ira Work is here with me. Ira, you probably remember getting faxes on your machine when they had faxes and when they were a thing. And they say, you need to buy this stock.
Oh, yeah.
And then you find out, oh, you already own this stock and you'd love for me to pump up the value. Call it pump and dump. Mm-hmm. And then you can make lots of money. You know, so a lot of times we don't necessarily recognize that there are all kinds of conflicts and things that we just may need to be a little bit leery about when we're getting information. And, you know, sometimes there are things that's just really complicated. I find that the area of economics escapes a lot of people. And it makes sense when you think about it. It is so complicated that they call it the dismal science. They call it the dismal science for a reason. It's dismal. It's complicated. But we're here to try to make it a little bit simpler for you, because that is what I like to do. Because the person that is confused, A, they don't do anything. B, when they do something, they do the wrong thing. C, fear is just not a good thing. You don't want to be in fear all the time. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. Matter of fact, one of the things I want to start off with is I got a text message from Bell. He was on, just coming off the radio with Matt Murphy, and the conversation, apparently somehow I ended up in the conversation. So what I want to do is I want to walk through what they were talking about, and I want to help you understand something that was very confusing, and they found, to some extent, they did a pretty good job. There were a couple areas where I think that there were some really good things coming out, but sometimes it went a little bit off the rails. So I want to make sure that I get it back on the rails. But the conversation was about Bitcoin. So, you know, what we're going to do, Nick, is I want to make sure, and Leviticus, I want to make sure that I have this clip that comes through. So first off, it started off with this. Matt was making a comment.
I feel a bit like an old man when I talk about Bitcoin. And then I talked to somebody like our good friend Paul Winkler, whom you hear me regularly reference as somebody that I absolutely trust. Paul Winkler has nothing for cryptocurrency. And I've never really delved that deeply into how it works, but it seems rather shady to me.
So one person made a comment that I actually was completely fine with somebody taking anywhere from, I think it was 1% to 10% of their investments and putting it in Bitcoin or cryptocurrency or something speculative. And I just want to be clear about that is not what I recommend. Now, I may say if you are a dietitian, you may understand that, you know, it might be okay to have, like, say, I'm going to put 10% of my diet in fats, because, you know, fats are good for the brain. It helps with brain function. I'm not a dietitian, but or a nutritionist, but I know that because I have clients that are, you know, one that's a PhD in it, and she regularly educates me on this thing. But if you said, hey, you know, I think you ought to have 10% of your diet in arsenic, I think we'd probably have a problem. And that's kind of the way I look at it. I don't look at it as something that I would have anything in. And not because of any other reason than it is not an investment. And I talk about that a lot. You know, so if we look at cryptocurrency, and one person was saying that, you know, Bitcoin wasn't a cryptocurrency, and it actually is. by definition, that, but somebody had actually made that comment that it wasn't, but it is. It just happens to be the one that's best known. So, you know, he says, I don't get this stuff Matt's talking about. I don't understand how this works. And yeah, it is. It's really complicated. Now, one of the things that we find with cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin or any of these things is, what is the value of it? And we often say, well, the value of it is whatever somebody will pay for it. Now, when we talk about, let's say, real estate, I can get an idea of the value of real estate because there's a rental value involved in it. Or the example, as a matter of fact, I popped in the radio station. I had a conversation with Matt and Bell. And here's what I said to him. I said, guys, look, here's the deal. I've got this investment. And I want you to understand that this investment pays $4,000 a year, okay? It pays $4,000 a year, and it is a government bond. Now, that government bond, bonds are paying, the longer bonds, you know, 10 plus years, are paying 4% right now. So if I have an investment in a government bond that pays 4% or $4,000, I can tell you that if you were to try to sell it, you would get how much money? $100,000. That's not so complicated. We can get that, right? Now, let's say if you had a stock portfolio and you were to tell me that it was a bunch of value stocks. Ira, we know value stocks sell for a multiple of earnings, and it's about 10, right? Huh? About 10 times.
It's just maybe a little bit below or a little bit above.
It depends on if it's international or U.S. company is. Yeah, so it's going to be about 10 times earnings. Mm-hmm. Is about what value stocks are selling for. So let's say that I told you that I had a big basket of value stocks and they had $1 million in earnings. I could tell you that the portfolio right now, as we sit, is worth about $10 million. I get that. Now, what if you told me that you had an investment that had zero coming in? There was nothing. And this is what I said to Matt and Bell. I said, what's it worth? And Matt looks at me and goes, I don't know. I said, exactly. You don't know. I don't know what it's worth. And that's the issue. We don't have a stream of income in order to value it. Now, I actually made a comment to a friend of mine who's a Bitcoin collector. One of my dear friends down in Texas, and he knows coins like the back of his hand. I mean, he really, really knows this area, and he trades these things. And it's not an investment, and he'll tell you that. He says it's a store of value, but he can make money on it because he treats it like a business that he knows an awful lot about. He's very skilled and knows an awful lot more than most people would ever dream of knowing because he's obsessive. But one of the things he talked about regarding coins, he said, what if you had to go and buy a gallon of gas in 1964 or you had to buy gas in 1964. I kind of blew it. You had to buy a gallon of gas gas in 1964, and you had a quarter. How much gas could you buy? And the answer was a gallon. Like I said, I blew it already. And he said the reason is that the quarters back then were made of silver. It was solid silver. And he said, so you knew what it was worth. And it was fascinating because we got in this conversation. We're talking about, you know, why are nickels smooth around the outside? Pennies are smooth around the outside. But you have, he didn't call it a serrated edge, but it's this, you know, the jagged edge that a quarter has and that a dime has, because they didn't want people being able to scrape off the metal. But it didn't matter if you scraped off the metal with a penny or a nickel because the metal was worthless. So what they did is they actually had that. You could tell if somebody had actually done any scraping on it. For that reason. So he said, if you look at that particular point in time, you could have bought a gallon of gas for a quarter. And he says, how many quarters would you need today of 1964 quarters would you need to buy a gallon of gas today? And I said, I have no idea. He says, one. You could still buy it for a quarter because that silver quarter is worth about $4 or something like that. It was something in that neighborhood. So it's actually appreciated in value, not because the quarter has appreciated, obviously, but because it's made of silver and the actual value of that amount of silver is $4. Now, while he's talking, I'm like going, I'm going to go do a search. So I went and, you know, did a little search online. I was looking around going, okay, well, you know, how is he right about this? What is it? I knew he had to be right. But, you know, I saw these quarters selling for anywhere from $8. I saw one selling for like $150, and I was telling about it. And he goes, you know, like there's one for $1,000. It was online for that. And another one for $26. And he goes, never, 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 never. I would never pay that. I wouldn't pay more than spot. In other words, he wouldn't pay more than the weight of the silver in it. And I said, okay. And he says, because anything above that is speculative value. That is value just because of the fact that there are collectors that are willing to pay that amount for it. And that can go away in a heartbeat. And I said, yeah, really, really good point there. It could go away in a heartbeat. And that is the reality when it comes down to anything, any kind of cryptocurrency, anything, any kind of collectible or artwork or whatever, it's worth what somebody will pay for it.
That's right.
And if the demand goes away, what happens to the value?
It goes away.
Exactly. And, you know, the example that I gave to him and Matt, and Bill, we were all talking about this. I says, it's like this thing that I did on the show one day. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, and these people, bears repeating, these people that were on ships in South Africa would go out to sea, and then they would come back to port, and there would be a foot race to the payment office. And the reason was is that they would stack U.S. $20 bills in the payment office to pay the people that were out to sea. And they would put the most recently minted bills on the top. And then as you went down the stack, as people came in and got their pay, as you got down the stack, that they would have actually older $20 bills. And those weren't worth as much. And the point that the Wall Street Journal was making is that money is worth what we say it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Well, we teach that in one of our workshops in the American Dream Experience, that money is just a factor of language.
Exactly.
It's only the value because this is what we say it is.
And you take a $20 bill to somebody in the middle of Africa that doesn't know what a $20 bill is, living in a tribe, right. It's what?
It could be cattle. That could be their currency. It's cattle.
It could be toilet paper for
right.
them, the $20 bill.
But, you know, Elaine and I have had the privilege of traveling to, we did a count the other day, 17 different countries.
Okay. Wow.
And it's amazing the different currencies and the different sizes. We have actually some of the ugliest money in the world.
There's
so much.
True.
There's so much money that's so much nicer looking.
My father used to collect it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. The artwork is much greater. But in Peru, I wanted to exchange some money.
Okay.
And I showed our tour guide the $20 bill that I had. Mm-hmm. And he's like, they won't take that. I'm like, why not? He said, because there's a little tear in it. It had a little tear in the $20 bill, and they wouldn't take the $20 bill.
Thank you, Ira, because I was going to make that point, because my friend has a wife that is Ukrainian and talks about if it has any kind of damage to it, it isn't worth anything.
Right.
Excellent. So you actually had that happen.
Oh, yeah. I had that happen.
Yeah. So, you know, one person was actually making a comment, says, you know, we're in a rapidly changing world. And he was talking about, you know, a person was making this point about, you know, Bitcoin, you know, can't hold it. You know, there are a lot of things that you can't hold in your hand. And that most of the things in the world, you just can't hold in your hand, was the point being made. And, you know, Bell made a comment to me. He says, you know, one of the things that stuck with me, Paul, is something you taught years ago on your radio show, was that when you own stocks, you own companies, and you can touch them. And I said, yeah, you know, because that's what I used to. I was talking to my son about that this morning. I says, you know, when you were in fifth grade, I went in and did. Remember when I went in and did the career day? And he goes, yeah. And I said, I walked in and I started talking about what I do. And I was like, oh, gosh, how do I make this interesting to fifth graders? And I said, how many of you own, you know, have a Nintendo? And all these cans, these little kids, their hands went up in the class. And I says, you know, Andrew, my son, owns part of that company. And I said, how many of you, your parents, maybe shop at Home Depot? And they're like, ah, their hands go up. And I says, well, Andrew owns part of that company. May only be a tile off in the corner, but, you know.
Or a quarter of the tile.
Yeah, a quarter of a tile. But, you know, he has an investment portfolio and he owns some of it. And as he pointed out, he said, it didn't help me with the girls in the class. And I said, you know, buddy, look, when you're in fifth grade, who cares what the girls in the class think? It doesn't really matter a whole lot. So, you know, that was the point being that if, let's say, a company doesn't think a currency is worth anything anymore, they will just stop taking it. And at what point could you have that actually happen with the dollar? It could happen. It could happen with any currency. But, you know, the reality of it is the U.S. dollar is very well kept after. And because of that, it is being used as a reserve currency. There was actually a change where they were talking about, you know, that the Chinese currency was going to be taking over. And, you know, it was interesting because if you look at the data on the percentages, when all of that was going on, the dollar's usage as a reserve currency only went down a fraction of 1%. And yet, I can't tell you how many times I got emails, I got calls, I got people going, oh my goodness, Paul, this is going to happen. This is going to we're going to lose reserve currency status and all that. And I said, no, no, no. And I gave all the reasons why I didn't believe that was going to happen, why the Chinese currency wasn't going to be that thing. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at it, you go, wow, you know, there are a lot of things that can scare us. And when we look at currencies, you know, currencies are constantly trading. And Bell made the point, and I like this, that he made this point about the yen. He says, you can trade the dollar versus the yen, too, because, you know, Matt was talking about trading, you know, the Bitcoin versus the dollar. You know, why is it fluctuating in value? And Bell made the point, you know, he said, you know, well, you can trade the yen versus the dollar and it fluctuates as well. And I says, yeah. And I says, a really good point you made. Now, I would take that a step further. And I would say, if you look at the yen, yeah, over at McDonald's, you can buy a cheeseburger for so many yen, right? You can, because McDonald's is everywhere, you can buy a cheeseburger. And the reality of it is, it's not constantly fluctuating in value. The amount of cheeseburgers you can buy for so much yen won't change a whole lot because there is a stability to currency because it is accepted in countries. Now, if we look at stable currencies, you know, versus something like the Bitcoin with an incredibly high standard deviation, that makes it such that people do not want to go and buy things and sell things. Matter of fact, Tesla actually had a thing when they began accepting Bitcoin. Elon Musk actually said that Bitcoin payments would not be converted to fiat currency. They would not do it. They wouldn't go and convert it, take Bitcoin, and then turn it back into fiat currency or dollars. Well, then all of a sudden they decided, ooh, this isn't working out so well. And what happened is not too long later, you know, you look at March 24th of 2021, it was from newsbitcoin.com. They were talking about that Tesla was going to start accepting Bitcoin payments. And then they said the Bitcoin paid to Tesla will be retained as Bitcoin is what they said in this article in March of 2021. It would not be converted back. Okay, so you think, oh, wow, you know, this is really going to get accepted, isn't it? Then a couple months later in May of 2021, not that much longer later, Tesla suspended vehicle purchases using Bitcoin out of concern over rapidly increasing use of fossil fuels for Bitcoin mining. Now, another thing that you could look at is not only that, but people were stealing electricity to mine Bitcoin. It's a whole complicated thing. But here's the other part of it. Is that you have a situation where you take a certain amount of Bitcoin for something, and then all of a sudden it drops in value and you've given away a car for something that isn't worth a fraction of what the car is. You've made a really bad trade there because that is what currency is. You trade goods for the currency in question. Now, there's a lot more that I want to get into here, so stay with me on this. There's a lot of ground to cover because this really, I've just scratched the surface on where this gets really interesting. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything that we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Every one of the offices is run by somebody with 20 plus years experience. They're all degree planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call. And we look forward to seeing you soon. All right, back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, along with Ira Work. And I just got this little rant. I want to keep going on this because this is really important. We were talking about Bitcoin and, you know, talking about the valuation of it. When I look at a government bond or something like that that pays 4%, and I tell you that I'm going to get something for $4,000, I'm going to get $4,000 of interest, I can tell you that the value of it's $100,000. You know, if I have something that pays money on a regular basis, I can tell you the value of it. The value of stock is the present value of all future earnings. We know that. When we're talking about something that has no payment or anything like that, it only has value based on agreement. And this is where we run into problems. Like Ira pointed out, you know, if you go overseas and you have a $20 bill or a bill that has any kind of a flaw, even a tiny tear in it, they may not take it at all. So what value does it have? The answer would be no value. Okay, so it is an agreement. The reason that money has value is because we all deem that it has value, which seems a little bit scary. But the reality of it is, when we have an economy that is run by this type of a currency, a fiat currency, and I'll get into the gold standard in a second, I'll talk about why we don't have the gold standard anymore. That is really what we're dealing with. Now, the next thing that came up on the show was this point about taxes and mining of Bitcoin. So let me just hit that clip real quick for you.
And I can't grasp the value in it.
Well, you got to remember, if government doesn't tax your money, it's not worth anything.
Well, I mean, So
just being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know. No. I want to engage on that line because that aspect of this would lean me toward Bitcoin or toward cryptocurrency more broadly. Yeah. The idea that it is not controlled by any government and it's not controlled by any centralized banking.
And its value fluctuates based on the supply and demand of it.
Yeah, but that's where I get a little squishy because we start talking about data mining or Bitcoin mining and how these things are uncovered. And like there's a finite amount of them, but
finite amount that will be produced. There is a cap on how many that they can mine.
OK, so there's a lot to chew on right there. Number one, talking about can't tax something, it's not worth anything. And Bell is just joking about that. But the thing that people don't realize is that you can tax. And this is something that the IRS has their eyes on. And the idea being that if you buy something, let's say you put money into dollars into Bitcoin, and then it grew in value, and then you use that Bitcoin that you're actually spending and you spend it on something. And of course you paid, let's say $10,000 for it. And you happen to have seen it grown to $15,000, just to use an example. Well, you have a $5,000 capital gain and that is a taxable gain. Well, the issue is, there's a tax right there. Now, if you look at the IRS website, and the IRS is, there was something actually in CoinLedger talking about this. It says major exchanges like Coinbase and Kraken report to the IRS through 1099 forms. In addition, the IRS works with contractors like Chain Analysis to analyze public blockchains transactions and match anonymous wallets to known investors. And they're just here talking about if you don't report transactions that have been reported to the IRS via Form 1099, you may automatically be sent a warning letter about your unpaid tax liability. In the future, the IRS will have even more information about cryptocurrency investors at its disposal, because that is one of the things that they're working on is how to get more more information on people that are doing transactions. So number one, you do have that. Secondly, if you're looking here at the transactions and when I actually use cryptocurrency, you have people that have lost their passwords.
Uh-huh. They've lost their wallets. I actually had somebody doing an internship with me, and he had invested. He was in college. He had invested, I don't know, $8,000-$9,000. It got up to about $200,000, and it started going down. And you know, he sat through our workshops, and he said to me, "I should have never bought that stuff, but I'm kind of stuck right now because I forgot the password to my wallet and I can't get my money out."
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've seen some really big, big, quote unquote, investors lose everything that they had because they don't know their password. Can't find it. There's somebody actually had the password on a phone and it was phone gone. You know, literally into a lake. And you just imagine, you know, oh my goodness. And I guess it was the only, I don't know, is it the only place it was? It was just really weird. It was, he, for some reason, could not get it back. But, you know, if you look at, for example, currencies and governments and so on and so forth, we used to have the gold standard, right? And it was the idea that you could turn in your dollars for gold. And you would have these great booms in the economy in the 1800s when people would get excited. They would turn their gold in for dollars and they would be buying and selling, trading and doing all of that. And then when they got a little bit nervous, they would turn in their dollars for gold and then the money supply would drop. And this is part of the reason, one of the reasons amongst many, that we went away from a gold standard because we couldn't control the money supply and it would cause these horrible corrections, quote unquote, in the economy. And, you know, you have the gold standard just basically meaning that the value of the country's currency is linked to a specific amount of gold. And when you're under that type of standard, governments need to be ready and willing to buy and sell gold to anyone at a set price. Well, sometimes what would happen is money would flow in from other countries and they would want to redeem their dollars, their US dollars, for gold. And that was a problem. Now, the U.S., if you look around the world, you know, you really have governments around the world have all pretty much gone off of any kind of a gold standard. Now, one person made a comment that there are countries that are using Bitcoin. And that was the evidence that it was legitimate and that they were using it for their currency. Well, some countries used to use gold, too. And that was actually physical. And then they went away from it. Now, what if the currency isn't physical? Or it is physical, but people no longer value it? What would be an example of something like that? I guess you could say, you know, wampum. You know, you had beads that were traded and they were used as a currency. You know, you have... you know, there's if you look at other things that have been used, tea bricks were used as money, feathers were used as money, cowrie shells, salt. Roman soldiers used to be paid in salt. That's where the word salary comes from. You know, teeth were used. You know, so you have a lot of weird things that were used as currency that are no longer used as currency. And what if we no longer value it anymore for that reason? You got a problem on your hands. What if all of a sudden there's a computer glitch or an issue? Then all of a sudden, you know, another thing is that, you know, one of the things they were talking about in that clip, we were talking about governments. You know, I like it that the government can't follow and track and all of that. Well, that's a problem as well, if you think about it, because a lot of nefarious activities are taking place using cryptocurrencies. In fact, there's a fascinating thing that I found. I was looking at, you know, stablecoin, for example. Stablecoin is this idea of having a cryptocurrency whose value is pegged to another currency, commodity, or a financial instrument. And the conversation regarding this was how much activity, illegal activity, is taking place using these types of cryptocurrencies. And back in 2018, it was like they had this one thing, it was chain analysis, which I just referred to, actually had a share of illicit transactions, the volume, estimated volume, I guess it would be, of illicit transactions using different types of assets. It was something in the neighborhood of 70% back in 2018 was done using Bitcoin. 70% of the activity. Now it was a little bit less than 25%. What was it replaced by? It was replaced by stablecoin. And you would say, well, why would they shift from using one type of cryptocurrency to another? Well, it could be because it's pegged to something. It has a little bit more stability. Remember the problem with a cryptocurrency being used for buying and selling things. If it's not stable, you got a problem on your hands. So I'm going to take a quick break. I want to come back, and there was a comment about that the government hates it, quote unquote. So let's talk a little bit more on Bitcoin. The government hates it, you know, and the point that they were making there. I want to just build on that a little bit. And there are some other points that I want to make because this is really important because there are a lot of people that are using this as an investment. And as I've said so many times, it is not an investment. It is very speculative. If you didn't catch my point about coins and coinage in general, there is a value of old coinage, which is the value of the actual metal that's in it versus what it might sell for. And the difference between those two numbers would be the speculative aspect that could go away. In fact, a friend of mine said he would go to these coin dealers and these little symposiums that they would have, and he would look around. Because his father lost a fortune because he was collecting things that were only collected by older people. And guess what happened to the older people?
They died.
They died. So he looks around to see how many younger people will keep demand alive. Think about that for a second. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more competent investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.